Good evening. I'd like to call the May 25th, 2021 Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors workshop meeting to order. Time is approximately 7:01 p.m. We rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Puts up the flag. There you go. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
to the Republic,
which it stands, one nation,
indivisible, liberty,
and justice for all. Great. Thank you, Mark. Let the record reflect that all listed Board of Supervisors are present this evening, as well as all listed staff, which includes Mark Hudson, our Township Manager, Carol Schuler, Municipal Engineer, Peter Nelson, Solicitor, and Bob Preston, Sewer Engineer. Our announcements are our standard announcements, which I'll read now. The Township meetings are recorded for the purpose of preparing the minutes, and the recording is destroyed 6 months after the minutes are approved. This meeting will also be recorded by the teleconference provider, which in our case is Zoom. It's requested that all persons wishing to speak before the board shall state their name, address, and the subject matter upon which they wish to speak for the record. In the interest of facilitating the business of the board, all persons addressing the board shall be limited to 2 minutes unless such time is extended by the chair for good cause. This Board of Supervisors will provide a reasonable opportunity for citizens to comment on any non-agenda items after all agenda items have been addressed, but prior to the adjournment of the public meeting. Meeting attendees will be able to ask questions at specific time during the meeting through chat, Zoom chat, or by audio, unmuting yourselves, or by sending an email to our manager, Mark Hudson. His email is manager@lowerfrederick.org. Or you can also call the Lower Frederick Township office number, and that will also be that is also forwarded to our manager. Mark, can you announce the executive sessions that were held?
Yes, since our last meeting, we had executive sessions held on May 6th to discuss litigation, and on May 24th to discuss personnel.
Great, thank you. So the first item on tonight's agenda is a Zieglerville Road home heating oil release. I guess, Mark, you'll do the introduction.
Yes. We have Rob Fogle from DCNR with us, DEP with us, who will give us an overview of their findings from the assessment that they did on the property, and then we'll take questions. Rob, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it. And thank you to the Board of Supervisors for having me. As Mark said, I'm going to give just a brief overview of the history of the site and then discuss our findings and where we are right now. So as everyone knows, on August 28th, PADEP received a complaint of heating oil flowing across a down gradient's neighbor's driveway and grass from the area of a recently burned down building at 204 Zieglerville Road. A few days later, on the morning of August 31st, the township manager, Mark, contacted DEP and requested that we respond. We visited the site to determine whether any contamination existed and to investigate any potential MS4 issues. At the time of that initial site visit, we did not evidence of contamination at the burn structure itself was not visible. However, there was an area of fuel oil saturated soil observed in a depressed area adjacent to the property line. This oil was red and appeared to be number 2 home heating oil. So on September 1st, we conducted another site visit along with the Township Police Department, investigated the area, spoke with both the homeowner, Mr. Hockle, and neighbors at 214 Zieglerville Road. At that time, it was learned that the Hockle property had 2 275-gallon heating oil tanks in the basement that were allegedly empty, along with a floor drain heading down gradient. In late September, DEP began to draft a statement an access agreement that they were going to present to Mr. Hockle to gain access to his property and investigate the extent of the contamination. Preliminary scoping and assessment work on accessible areas was also conducted during this time. This sampling, which occurred October 1st, indicated that there were MTBE exceedances, which is basically a fuel additive. Petroleum impacts were also observed on the neighboring property, which we believe they were transported there via stormwater flow. The township and their staff, including the police department, assisted DEP during these site visits and worked closely with both us, DEP, and EPA, who was also involved. During DEP's efforts to secure access to this site, we drafted a scope of work and a request for contractual services. The scope of work was finalized in November. We had a scoping meeting with our contractor, ARM, in December, and ARM developed a work plan that was approved on January 26th. However, as DEP was progressing with the assessment plans and working to gain access, we were notified on November 30th that Mr. Hockle had passed away prior to signing the agreement. We attempted to contact Mr. Hockle's sister to have her sign the agreement, but she ultimately claimed that she had no authority over the estate, so access was not voluntarily given at that time. On February 9th, staff from DEP's Environmental Cleanup and Brownfields program, along with our Bureau of Investigations, procured a search warrant for the site in order to gain access to collect samples and perform the assessment of the heating oil release. These activities took place from February 10th through February 12th and included observing the condition of the tanks in the basement of the demolished building, determining what, if any, additional petroleum-based liquids may be present, and determine the extent of the release, including its potential to affect a nearby unnamed tributary to Perkiomen Creek, which was our primary focus during the investigation. ARM produced a report that I sent to the township on April 9th. The results indicated primarily that of the 8 soil samples that were collected, only 2 had detections of petroleum constituents. However, neither of those 2 detections exceeded our residential statewide health standard for soil to groundwater. Of the 5 water samples that were collected, only 2 had detections of petroleum constituents, neither of which exceeded our residential use aquifer statewide health standard for groundwater. So we did some additional sampling at 214 Ziglovel Road, and we found non-detections of compounds that made up a portion of petroleum products that represent the greatest risk to human health and the environment. A letter was sent to the homeowner reflecting that and providing the data that we collected. So the final data from this investigation determined that the waters of the Commonwealth would not be impacted from the levels of heating oil remaining in the soil and shallow groundwater. And as such, DEP closed out our investigation. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions from the board, and then we'll open it up to other participants.
I don't have a question, but I want to thank Mr. Fogel for coming and addressing our meeting and the public.
Of course.
Yeah, I'll second what Supervisor Hexter said. Thank you. I think you gave a very good overview of things as I understood them.
Thank you.
I don't have a question of Mr. Fogel, who did an excellent job. I do have one of Mark. Did we hear back from the Browns after they received the reports?
I sent them the information, and I did talk to Rob at one point, yes.
Okay.
I know they're on the call today.
So. Oh, they are. I didn't see them. Okay.
They were.
So if there are no other questions, then I guess if we have questions perhaps from anybody else who's on tonight's call for Mr. Fogel or for Mark. Mark, you haven't gotten anything on your end?
I am not seeing anything, no.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Fogel, for the report. Again, I think the work was thorough. Obviously, you summarized things, I think, very nicely in for everybody concerned. So I really appreciate, you know, the work that you and DEP has come out. I think we all do. I shouldn't just speak for myself. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. And just want to thank Mark for being a great partner throughout the entire process. He was easy to get a hold of and communicate with. So I think it was great work all around. So thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that moves us to public comment on agenda items. We have any comments from the public on tonight's agenda items?
I am not seeing anything, Chuck.
All right. So we'll move on to the next item on our list, which is the discussion of the sewer loan modification presented by Concord Financial. Mark, do you want to sort of do a little bit of an introduction?
Yeah, so we began working earlier in the year with Concord Financial to take a look at our current loan, the loan that we have for the sewer plant, sewer collection system. So we worked with Concord Financial, Daryl Peck, who we've worked with, the township worked with in the past before I got here. I think he helped with the original loan, and then he helped with a loan modification in 2018. In 2020, the township, just through the bank, we did just a loan rate reduction, but wanted to, with the new rates as things were moving and as things are very fluid right now, I wanted to work with Concord again to try to get the best options that we could moving forward for the loan. So we worked with Daryl Peck to put this out on the street as a request for proposal, and Daryl got the results and has a presentation for us on those. So just give me 1 second here to switch over, Daryl, and then you can start.
Are you ready for me to start, Mark?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to be working with the township again. Mark, thank you for the introduction. I think you hit the high notes here. We were involved with the original financing in 2015. We did a complete refinancing in 2018. And certainly we've kept in touch over the past, you know, I don't know, 12 months or so to see if there's an opportunity to improve the township's position, knowing where, you know, current interest rates are. So if you move to the next slide, please. Just to give a little bit more background with some of the newer supervisors, you know, overall, the plan is to refinance the 2018 note that has a current balance of a little over $8.5 million. And really create an opportunity for the township to borrow an additional $250,000 for the completion of the sewer collection system. I'm kind of stressing the option there. What we did is we went out and secured an extra $250,000. You're going to hear this many times on a drawdown basis, meaning if you need the money, you'll use the money, you'll draw the money down, you'll put the money towards a project. If you don't need those additional funds, you're not required to take it down or to borrow it. And of course, your loan would be reduced. But the point is to get flexibility here for the township to move forward. So, you know, that's really the two main points of this financing is to refinance and to borrow the extra $250,000. The 2018 note that we're going to refinance was a refinance of the original $10 million loan from 2015, and that financed the new wastewater treatment plant and the extension of the collection system. To hit the current note, the current note is a rate of 2.45% for another 7.5 years, variable thereafter at 75% of prime and a cap 475. That current remaining term is about 22 years. The current annual debt service on the 2018 note is about $507,000. And as I think you've seen the graph before, and we'll see it again, you know, that $507,000 current debt service payment will steadily increase up to almost $525,000 in 2028 and potentially increase to as high as $575,000 out 2043. So, you know, the goal here will be able to reduce those outward payments and reduce the exposure and the budgetary impact. Next slide, please. So what we did, you know, we undertook to prepare and circulate a term sheet or a request for proposal. I think I put in here to over 30 banks. We actually sent it, I think, to more than 40 banks. You know, we say we write a term sheet or a request for proposal. You know, we write that in your favor. We structured it with a drawdown, and we structured it to be prepayable at any time. You know, this is telling the bank how you want to borrow money. You don't want to send a letter to the bank that says, "Hi, we want to borrow money. Tell me how you want to lend it to me." So we wrote a term sheet completely in the favor of the township. We did get four rate proposals from one of the banks. Summary of those proposals are on page four. It's important to note, I think Mark did reach out to the current note holder back in March and had gotten some rate offers. I'll point out and stress that the rate offers you received for this are much more favorable than the proposals that the township received back in March. So, you know, by all means, the process worked for you and you're getting lower rates, which means lower payments for the township. Over the past, you know, 2 or 3 months and talking with Mark, you know, this was an outcome-based refinancing. You know, sometimes you talk about refinancing, all you're doing is just saying, what are we going to save? But there were really three key initiatives that we identified in working with Mark to really meet the objectives, or what we believe the objectives of the township. And, you know, so we're going to touch on those. But the best rate proposal you got was from First National Bank of Newtown, a rate of 2.5% for the first 15 years, variable thereafter at 65% of prime and a cap of 4.25%. And again, those will get the objectives that we set out to do. Number one, reduce current 2021 debt service by approximately $120,000. That'll offset the budgeted deficit that's in the township's budget. So you'll be able to retain that cash or retain your operating reserves and not deplete the reserves kind of going into this project. Number two, get the option to borrow the additional $250,000 for the project. Another big enhancement that I came up with very recently is, you know, additionally, you have about $2.6 million from the prior loan that's available for the project. I worked out that we can actually take that $2.6 million today at closing, actually apply that towards the repayment of the 18 note, and then really have $2,850,000 available on the drawdown to put towards a project. So with the uncertainty of the project, or more so the project cost, you're going to be able to save, you know, an additional, I'd say, $50,000 to $75,000 of interest expense by, you know, taking that $2.6 million that's earning next to nothing in the bank, putting it towards a loan at closing, and then kind of redraw the money as you actually need it for the project. So quite an enhancement there and save some additional interest expense. The third key initiative was to lock in annual debt service with no increases in 2022 and 23 at approximately $508,000. And thereafter, you know, lock in your not to exceed payment of about $519,000 through the final maturity date of 2044. With the additional borrowing and the relief in 2021, we did add, I'll say, just one more year to the term of the loan. So instead of it being a 22-year loan, it's a 23-year loan. But certainly, I'd say equitable and responsible given the life of the asset being financed, being the collection system. And that will certainly eliminate the potential future increases in debt service. And even with that slight bump from 2023 to 2024, that would be after the new connections came on, and the new revenues from those connections will more than offset that kind of slight increase from 23 to 24. Next slide. I'm going to hit kind of just the projected required sewer rates first. Certainly, you know, Mark, Carol, you know, Bob can certainly add a little more as necessary. But, you know, following is the existing and projected sewer user rates just shown through 2026 based on the plan of finance and the currently known sewer system operations and the currently expected near-term additional users. So your current annual and quarterly rate is $700 annually or $175 quarterly. You know, based on this financing and, again, the currently known users and operations, 2022 and 23 would be projected to have an annual user rate of $800 or a quarterly rate of $200. And in 2024 through 2026, a user rate of about $900 or quarterly rates of $225,000. So really, I'm just kind of putting those numbers out there as to what this financing will really do for the township slash users. And I don't know if Mark or Carol, maybe that's a good segue to for any kind of more input from you. Or I can pause for any questions.
Yeah, the current debt service, you know, had us well above where we are now. So with redoing the loan, again, it helps us slow down the annual increases in the user rates. So this gives us an option to do it at a slower rate of increase than where we had originally been, was originally projected in the 2018 loan debt service report.
Yeah, Daryl, this is Marla Hexter. You recall I worked with you in 2018. Thank you.
Absolutely.
For your help then. And just for clarification for the public and for the record, the $2.6 million was money that was borrowed in 2015 was the original loan, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, that money was borrowed in 2015. And we've been paying interest on it all this time, and that project never happened. And so whoever idea it was to put that back towards the loan at this stage, rather than continuing to accrue interest on a six-year loan that has not been used for anything, that was an excellent idea.
I have to give that to Daryl.
Daryl, excellent idea.
Well, thank you. My pleasure. I'm almost trying to think here for you.
Well, because again, it's unfortunate that money was borrowed from the beginning, but it was, and this board now is trying to make the best of it. So thank you for your professional service and helping us save some money for our residents.
Sure. My pleasure.
Hey, Mark. There is a graph on the document 3B, page 6 of 6, which I think complements what Daryl was just saying, and maybe you or Carol could speak to it.
Yep. Sorry, just give me a second here. I think that's the annual projected rates.
Right.
Yep. Go ahead, Carol. Carol and Bob worked on this.
So refinancing will slow the projected rate increases for the sewer system customers. And what we show here is a graph of the annual sewer rates that were projected by the 2018 report. They're in red. And then in green is the projected increases in the current report with this refinancing. So you can see it really does slow down the rate of increase in the sewer rental rates for current customers.
And again, these are the numbers that you would find in the self-liquidating debt reports from 2018, and then what we're projecting should we go forward with this in the 2021 loan scenario. Is that right?
Thank you. That's exactly correct.
Great.
This also assumes, just for presentation purposes, that you were to use all of the loan that's available.
Right. There are no more questions. You want to, Daryl, you're going to keep moving forward then?
I certainly can, yes.
Okay.
Mark, you want to put up the...
Yep, yeah. Don't know what I'm doing here.
Of course you do.
There we go.
So this is just a summary of the proposals that were received. We already highlighted the most favorable proposal being line two, the yellow line. First National Bank of Newtown, 2.5% for 15 years. A variable thereafter of the cap of 4.25% that blends to a worst case rate of 2.70%, which is frankly even better than the fixed rate that they offered you of 2.9%. So people always kind of hear variable and they think, well, I'd like to fix the rate, but even assuming the cap rate, it's even better than the fixed rate that the bank offered. So, and again, I stress, and I should say it enough times, the loan is a drawdown loan and prepayable at any time without penalty. So it gives all the flexibility to the township moving forward. Next slide is really just, again, the summary of the rates. I think we could probably skip over that. Probably too small for people to read anyway. If you want to flip the next screen, not sure if we can make this a little bit larger or if you have the capability to do so. But this is really just a running difference of the existing 2018 note debt service in column two, the resulting not to exceed 2021 note debt service. Column four is the annual increase, or in parentheses, decreases. And column five is the cumulative increases or decreases. So again, one of the key initiatives, 2021 debt service is about $507,000. We're going to reduce that to about $384,000, or a reduction of $120,000. Again, that's to offset the budgeted deficit and for the township to be able to hold on to its reserves. For the next couple of years, your debt service will be about the same as it would have been. Below the line where potentially your existing loan was going to go to the cap rate, you can see that in column three, the new debt service will max out at about $519,000. So outward there, it's a reduction of exposure of about $40,000 a year. So all in cumulatively, and again, even after borrowing, or if you borrow the additional $250,000, your total payments over the entire life are going to go down by $315,000. And again, that's even with borrowing an additional $250,000. So you've really improved your position here. Certainly locked in and better budget projections and better planning here with the new rate offer, or with the new refinancing opportunity. A lot of people like pictures better than numbers. If you flip to the last slide here, this is just a graphical presentation of all of those numbers. This is probably even the easiest to read here. The red lines being existing not to exceed debt service. The green bars being the new not to exceed debt service of the 2021 loan. After the three main initiatives. Refinance the 18 note, provide the option for $250,000 additional for the collection system, and to provide the $120,000 reduction in 2021. And again, with just a 1 year extension of the overall debt. I think this really kind of brings it all together. And the last page is the just the sources and uses of the new loan. So the new loan will be kind of subject to when we close, about $8,860,000. That'll pay off the 2018 note of about $8.5 million. As we talk, we're going to use $2.6 million of your existing loan proceeds. So really only just under $6 million of the loan will be used. That'll leave the $2,850,000 available to be drawn down for the project and generate the interest savings we talked about. That concludes my slide presentation. So I'll certainly entertain any questions or talk about next steps.
Daryl, this is Marla again. I was going to ask you what the closing costs and the legal costs were, but it looks like they've already been built in. Is that correct?
Yes. The total costs are estimated to be about $65,000 there, you see. Those are rolled into the loan. So you're not out of pocket those costs. So they're really rolled in again. So when we talk about what your payments are going to be, they're in there.
Thank you.
Yep.
Very nice job, Daryl.
Supervisor.
Thank you, sir. Daryl, does anybody on the board have any questions, further questions for Daryl before we open up the floor for questions from the public?
I just had one more question, Daryl. What's the time frame for this?
Well, the plan would be that, I guess your typical is to more so authorize the preparation and advertisement ordinance. You could certainly either do that tonight or at your meeting on June the 1st. And then should you do that, our plan would be for you to enact the ordinance after it's properly prepared and advertised, obviously given to your solicitor for review on June 22nd. That would also formally accept the proposal. And then we would plan to close probably, what do I have here, June 29th. I'm sorry, not June 29th, towards the end of July. Usually takes about 30 days from the time you enact your ordinance to close.
And how long is that rate locked in for?
It's good through, I have it held through your meeting on September the 6th. I'm sorry, not September, July the 6th.
So maybe this is for Mark and Peter. Do we need to do something today or can we wait a week?
We can wait until June 1st to authorize the preparation of the ordinance and the advertisement of the ordinance like we normally would.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the board before we open up the floor to the public? Hearing none, we have a question, it looks like, from Brian Hill. Can he, Brian, unmute himself?
Yep, I asked him.
Hi, good evening. Brian Hill, 11 Zieglerville Road. So in the most recent Board of Supervisors meeting, there was a decision not to extend a builder's conditional plan, which net affect the township about $400,000, as I mentioned in that last meeting. My question is, as you mentioned, it sounds like we're saving our township owners of homes some money, but it doesn't appear that way because it looks like we're having some incremental step-ups. How would that $400,000, if the plan was extended, allowed the builder to continue moving forward with potential houses being built in that 22-23 range, how would that affect this loan and how would it positively affect our township people who do contribute to the sewer plant funds? I'm not sure if you can answer that question now, but just wanted to put it on the record.
Mark, do you want to answer that, or?
We're looking at saving the money here with the loan. I can't really comment on it.
I wouldn't answer it other than I think Mr. Hill's assuming that $400,000. There was no guarantee that there was any $400,000 payment coming from that particular developer. Beyond that, I don't think we should address it at this point in time.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you, Brian.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
We have any other questions from the public at this time, Mark?
I do not see any.
So we will consider advertising this ordinance, I guess is what we're calling it, next week at our monthly meeting, right?
Yeah, at our June 1st meeting, as we normally do, we'll just do a brief summary of the proposal again, and then ask the board to authorize the creation of the ordinance and advertisement of the same.
Fair enough.
And then we'll plan on approving the ordinance at the June 22nd meeting. And then, as Daryl said, we'd go into closing prior towards the end of July.
Okay. Are there any other? Go ahead, Mark.
We will, and are making our normal June payment as it currently stands. So this would take effect after the first payment of 2021.
Are there any other questions, comments from the board before we move on to the next agenda item? I think it's fair to say from all of us, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Daryl. Thank you, Carol. It's obvious that you put in a lot of work and trying to find as many options as you can, given the circumstances of today's market and today's economy and all the uncertainty that comes with it. So thank you.
My pleasure. You're welcome. Thank you.
Next agenda item for tonight is a request from Mr. Quay to complete a lot line adjustment on some properties that he owns. So I'll turn it over again to you, Mark, to lead us in this.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yep. Hold on, can I move?
I guess I'm not breaking the camera.
No, you're good. You're there. Hold on, just let me get my little slideshow up. All right, so Mr. Quay has come to the township several times. He has several properties. He owns several properties of what used to be called the Ideal Bungalow Sites. The map you're looking at is actually from 1915. You can't really see it because the wording's too small, so I put it on there. So this is actually a plan from 1915, the Ideal Bungalow Sites, which kind of developed the Spring Mound area. So wanted to show this for everyone to see. It's kind of neat, and Mr. Quay actually has a copy of one of the originals, or a blue line copy of it. The items, so currently lot 66 and 67 is one deed, and then the lot in blue 68 is one deed, and then the lot in red that I show in red, 48, 49, 69, 70, and 71 are all on one deed. Over the years with the county, they've combined all these little lots onto just a fewer number of deeds. And as with all these little lots in the county doing things just got changed around a little bit. But that's where it is at this point. This is what we found out. So Mr. Quay is looking to remove what was lot 69 from the current deed that his home is on and combine it with 68 to make a lot that would be buildable. This is a plan that his engineer put together. So you can, I'll zoom in here. So this here, again, you can kind of see where the red lot was, is Mr. Quay's house and property. This A is what was lot 69 in the original Ideal Bungalow plan. And number one is the 68. So he would like to do a lot line change to move A out of the existing deed into one to make a buildable lot. I just put a satellite image in and the satellite image doesn't exactly match up, but this was the two sites. Here you can see his house. Again, the satellite's not perfect, but just I threw that in there so everybody could take a look at it. And then I have a, this is a map of all Mr. Quay's properties that was also done by an engineer for him. Mr. Quay, do you want to ask your question? And then we have, I know our solicitor and engineer would chime in here then. Unless you're good with how I presented it.
Very nice presentation so far, Mark.
Do you want to add anything?
I would just like to say we have a potential buyer for this that is a she is now in the Perkiomen, they are now in the Perkiomen Valley School District with two young kids. And I was fortunate to meet them personally, and I would enjoy it to have them as my neighbors. It's very interesting, and I won't mention names, but the lady of the family is a woman of the Pottstown Police Force, which I am very happy to have for a neighbor. I am all excited about it. I would like to see the top of 3rd Avenue really turn into something nice. And I've seen a lot of homes in Springmount, like the treehouse across from there, which is a mess, and I'm tickled pink to see it all coming to a head, and we're going to make this a very nice property for in Lower Frederick Township. And I guess that's all about all I got to say. The lot 68 and 69, if you look at the contours on the map, you can see the lines. And it's very buildable. There's hardly any problems on doing this, and it's a very nice location and will make a nice home for somebody. And I guess that's all I really have to say.
All right. Peter, do you want to, we've talked about this a little bit, so we have some ideas for the board.
Yeah. So, you know, what specifically Mr. Quay is asking for is a waiver of land development. Because what he is planning to do with lot 68 and 69 is actually a lot line change. So he's changing the lot line of the property his house is on, which is 48, 49, 70, 71, to make it, kind of a little zag there. And then combine lot 68 and 69, move lot 69 into lot 68. So strictly speaking, it is a lot line change, which is a subdivision, which requires to go through the entire subdivision and land development process. And Mr. Quay is asking, because they're both empty lots, it's, there's nothing really going on here. It's an existing lot of an existing subdivision. He's requesting a waiver of land development. In talking to Mark and looking at the whole plan, if you look at the last page of the packet, page 6, which shows all of Mr. and Mrs. Quay's properties, there are a few other properties that if he wanted to, he could do either a true subdivision or another lot line change to create more building lots for these properties. My suggestion to Mr. Quay is it might be behoove him to do this all at once and get it all over with, instead of piecemealing it and, paying an engineer and paying all the fees, two or three times instead of just doing it at once. The advantage to the township is, we would, kind of nail this all down all at once. We would now know, we would now have a set of compliant building lots ready to be developed.
Peter, hold on. We lost you completely.
I would like to, pardon me if I'm interrupting. I would like to add something that at this point in time, I don't know how this is going to all end up on the other lots, but Second Avenue is going to have to go through a land development program to make this buildable. And I realize that. This is Third Avenue. This will be the only lot that is on this street. The bottom two lots below 68 and 69, if you look at the contours of the land, are really not buildable. It all falls under the steep slope. Someone would put, they would have an awful problem trying to build a house in there. It's just not buildable. So when I get rid of the Third Avenue lot 68 and 69, this completes Third Avenue because the next two lots above there have my driveway and my garage on, which is part of my house. So this one lot completes Third Avenue. And I'd like Third Avenue to be considered as a complete separate entity.
And Mr. Quay, that's up to you. I'm not trying to force you to do anything. I'm just suggesting it might save you money to do it all at once. But if you want to do it at separate times, that's certainly your choice.
Well, like I say, whoever would buy that property would have to get in land development. That would all have to be done at that point.
What I'm saying now, in order, strictly speaking, unless you're given a waiver of land development for lot 68 and 69, you're going to have to go through the same process to make this new lot, what you're calling a land development process. You would have to go through it for that lot unless the board grants you this waiver.
Yes, this waiver would be completely separate of Second Avenue. Completely separate. Like I say, I'm not a rich person. Whoever would buy this would have to go through the land development program.
It's just suggestions, sir.
No, I understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And if I was a rich person and planned to sell this whole thing, I would try to sell this whole thing off to a major developer. But I see a developer coming in there with lots trying to put some kind of twins or something like this. This would be a real nice separate home, a single dwelling. And it will make the whole area better. And I can't put it any more than that. This is a complete separate entity. I will not be coming back at the township for anything like that on Second. I will not be doing that. If you want me to sign off on that, I would be more than happy to.
Carol, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I do. Thank you, Mark. When I first got the information on this, I said, Mark, it's a minor subdivision, clean and simple. But then I looked at it a little closer and I thought, you know, there might be some reasons that the board would want to consider consider this waiver request. But I don't think we quite have everything tied down and clear the way I'd like to see it, to present it to this board with a full explanation. My suggestion actually back to the township manager was if we could establish a professional services agreement and meet with Mr. Quay, hopefully we could tie down all those questions and then be able to bring this back to the board with a recommendation from staff, of course, including the manager and the solicitor. So that would be my recommendation, not to out and out reject the waiver request, but that it's probably worth considering, but I think we need to give the board enough information that they can adequately consider it and why there would be an advantage to doing that as opposed to doing a full-blown minor subdivision plan through the normal process.
This is Chuck. Carol, just so I'm 100% clear, so the two options here are either a waiver, right? Or we make the applicant go through a minor subdivision.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
It's not the full-blown subdivision.
Mr. Chairman, those are kind of the two options, but you do have flexibility, at least with the in regards to the waiver of land development. Mm-hmm. What the waiver of land development does, you know, a full-blown waiver would allow this applicant to avoid complying with any of the saldo requirements that normally would apply under a minor subdivision. Mm-hmm. However, you can grant a waiver of land development and then condition that waiver upon compliance with some of those provisions. And that's one of the things Carol was suggesting that would allow us to kind of look at this, and we can make a recommendation. You know, to be honest, it would be Carol making a recommendation saying, hey, you know, I'm fine with granting the waiver, but I still think he needs to comply with A, B, and C. So we could mold the waiver so that it helps Mr. Quay get this, this process moving quickly and approved quickly. But at the same time, you know, the township gets, you know, compliance with certain saldo restrictions that we think are very important.
Okay.
So there is a middle ground there.
It's not an all or nothing situation, right? That's what you're basically saying.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is Marla. So if we were to go through a minor subdivision process, how long would that take, and can that be expedited if you don't find any concerns?
Yes, that would be me. So the standard process would be that the applicant has submission of a plan. We would be requiring that they show for a minor subdivision. So they're going to have to submit a plan. The minor subdivision requirements are a little less intensive than a standard subdivision. This is a lot line change, so it's not quite as intense. And it's in a public sewer area, so that reduces some of the stressors too. But it's still got to go through the Township Planning Commission, through the Montgomery County Planning Commission, cycle through that, and then come back to this board. So you're probably talking an absolute minimum of 90 days to be able to get him through that process. And that's if everything goes swimmingly.
So what I'm hearing you say, Carol, is you need more information before you would even recommend that.
Yes,
so you
ma'am.
So you might come back to us and say, sure, it looks okay, this is the restrictions I'd recommend, or you should go through the minor subdivision. So we don't even have a recommendation from you yet.
You do not, but I do see reasons why a waiver might serve the interest of the township. But I think we just need to nail down the details of that before I'd be comfortable recommending it to the board.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So, Mark, are you looking?
I think if everyone's okay, and if we can ask Mr. Quay here, if we can get a professional services agreement to him tomorrow, and then we can try to schedule a staff meeting probably early next week with Mr. Quay, and then we can try to bring this back to you, I would assume, at the June 22nd meeting, hopefully ready to go. Mr. Quay, does that work for you? Mr. Quay?
I kind of missed out a little bit. No, I'm a little hard of hearing at 78 years old. Pardon me. My hearing is not the best.
All right. Would you agree to enter a professional service agreement with the township so you'd pay for the engineer's time and the solicitor's time? We'd have a meeting. We'd come up with a game plan that the solicitor and engineer would then present to the board, probably if we can get everything done at the June 22nd meeting?
I would be more than happy to.
Okay, we could, if the board's okay with that, we can, I can make that, start that process tomorrow.
I just had one more question. Would we still want to get Planning Commission input, or would we bypass them entirely? How would this work?
I think, Marlo, that's one of the things Carol and I are going to have to look into to see whether or not it's really worthwhile to go in front of the Planning Commission. If you granted a true waiver of land development, it would bypass it, the Planning right. Commission.
But would we have the option to have them look at it, or you're saying it would, we wouldn't, they wouldn't even look at it?
Yeah, that could be an option, yes. That could be one of the requirements that we impose upon the grant of the waiver. We could say, yes, we want the Planning Commission to look at this.
So this is really just the first step so that we can, you know, sink our teeth into this and really understand all the nuances as I see it. So those other decisions will be forthcoming.
Correct.
Are there any other comments from board members? It seems like the applicant is okay with entering into the engineering services agreement. So great. Thank you, Mr. Quay.
Okay, I want to thank the board and especially Mark. Mark has been more than helpful. We've been working with this ever since around the first of the year. That's why I'm kind of getting a little frustrated, to be honest about it. It's right. been going on for quite a few months here to really get it to this point. The owners are really want to get their house started this year, and I'm hoping what we can do is move this along expediently as possible. And I thank the board again.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm not able to help with this one yet.
All right, that brings us to our next agenda item for this evening, which is the continuation of our discussion of the new construction residential disclosure notice. So I'll throw this to our solicitor, Peter Nelson.
So based on the board's review and comments at our last meeting in the beginning of May, I made some adjustments, changes to the disclosure ordinance, and I sent it back to you. You know, one of the things, some of the comments were you wanted a tighter, basically the ordinance lists all the information that needs to be provided as part of the disclosure statement. And the statement itself had somewhat different language. One of the comments the board made was they'd like the language to be more in line. So I did that. I also, the board stated they wanted certain specific items to be listed in the statement, such as trails, the location of trails, that was added. They also wanted to make sure that the buyer received, along with the record plan, a copy of a lot grading plan. That language was added. And then you wanted information concerning high water tables, groundwater, sump pumps or other conditions or equipment in the basement. And that information, that was also added. All those items were added as raised by the board at their last meeting. Actually, excuse me, that was actually raised at our April work session. I'm reading it wrong. That was in May. And so I'm here before you with the new ordinance. If the board's fine with it, I would just be looking for authorization to advertise, and which would mean it would be advertised for adoption either at the June work session or at the July regular meeting, whichever the board would want.
So just to open the discussion for the board, I think, Noel, you had in specific, you had some concerns, and we talked about additions that have those been addressed?
Yes, I'm satisfied with the result. Thank you.
And so you're going to include some samples along with this. Is that right, Peter?
Sample what?
You provided samples to, or somebody, I guess Mark did, right? Provided samples.
Yeah, these are examples of what would be required to be given to the new home buyer from things that we had from other developments.
Now, would we be providing that to, this is just for our education, or would this actually be provided in some form to the developer?
So the homeowner disclosure notice would be provided to the developer. The developer would then have to provide any home buyer with all the items that are listed in that. Included in that would be the lot plot plan, which had the grading and such in it, and then also whatever plan sheet from the development plan set that included the types of soils, depth to bedrock, water table. So in the one plan that I sent as an example, it was the overall erosion and sediment control plan for there. So whatever plan sheet had that information on it, the developer would be required to give to a new home buyer in that development.
So, Mr. Chairman, the only sample that would be provided to the developer would be the actual disclosure statement, which is an exhibit to the ordinance, and the developer would have to use that form. Okay. We would not be providing examples of the plans they would have to provide, but obviously, if you have the developer who asks, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing, we would help them out. But generally, we're not looking to give developers examples of plans and other information.
Okay, fair enough.
Peter, I'm very happy with it also. I think it looks great. I just have a question.
Thank you.
More on, you're very welcome. Good work. I know sometimes we're very picky in particular, and you did a good job of incorporating everything.
This has been a very smooth ride. So no, this is the way it should work. It's good.
Good. But my question is more about like what happens after this is enacted. So let's say, for example, the developer misses something or doesn't disclose something. I mean, what recourse does a new homeowner have? I mean, what does this, what?
If a developer fails to provide the necessary information, required by the ordinance. The ordinance, if you look on page 5, does have an enforcement provision. Mm-hmm. And so if the developer violates the ordinance, a property owner could come to the township and say, hey, I wasn't told about this, drainage easement going through my property. I just found out about it a year after I bought the property, weren't they supposed to do this under the disclosure ordinance? We could then go and cite that developer for violating our ordinance, just, like we can cite anyone for violating any of our ordinances. And if, we go in front of, the district judge and the district judge finds in our favor, the district judge could then impose a fine.
So the enforcement mechanism falls on the township, not on the homeowner themselves.
Yes. The homeowner could have, other civil claims against the developer, but they would not fall under our ordinance. They certainly could, under a civil action, they certainly could use the disclosure statement as, evidence of the developer, knowingly failing to provide that information. It certainly could help them in a case against a developer, but they wouldn't be enforcing our ordinance against a developer.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it does say $1,000 per offense per day, so it could add up very quickly.
Yes.
plus legal costs.
I thought it was a good job, Peter. I like.
Thank you.
Yes, this is good. I guess the one thing I think we touched on it last time as well, but this is for the very first home buyer of that property. That's what this would apply to. And just again, it's probably more paperwork or documentation, but I know when we're looking at some of the parcels at Arcadia, it sometimes appears as if it's changing names of the owner as it's going from the developer and maybe to a holding. I don't know how it works. So again, it would be the first actual documented residence of it. Is there anything
correct
that prevents it from being transferred from Snoopy Lane to, you know, the home builder and then to a resident? They wouldn't need to do this, or this
they would still covered? They would still, yeah, they you know, sometimes, you know, you have a developer who actually, you know, goes through the land development process, gets the plan approved. Sometimes they'll, you know, undertake the site work. Sometimes they'll flip it to a new developer. Sometimes, you know, but I've seen a lot of developments where the developer will undertake the site work, and then roads are built and lots are created, they'll flip it to an actual home builder who then sells the lot, you know, and builds the home. But under any and all of those circumstances, that first home buyer who's actually going to live in that house, mm-hmm. they have to be provided this statement. And someone, be it the developer or the home builder, is going to have to provide it and sign off on it and show that that home buyer was provided all this information. Okay. And they can't, there's actually language in the ordinance that says, you know, attempts to use like a straw buyer or someone else to kind of get around, you know, complying with this ordinance is it considered a violation of the ordinance.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Just one quick follow on to Terry's question. So like 20 years down the road, that house sells again. Obviously, this isn't part of the stipulation for that. Okay.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And, if the house sold, if the people buy it, the Smiths buy it, live there for 6 months and sell it, it doesn't apply. It really only applies for that first person who's living on that property.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would add too, under the enforcement point, they're not going to get a UNO without showing that this has been done.
Correct.
Right. So that goes back.
Thank to you for bringing that up.
How is this enforced?
Yeah. Right? I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, I actually believe they're supposed to provide it to us before they even pull a building permit. So they're not even going to get a building permit until we see a signed statement. That's the way it works.
Yeah, the bottom of page 4 makes that very clear what you just said. Any other questions for Peter?
I do have just one real quick question there. Thank you for pointing that out, Chuck, and asking that question. So if we're asking for this documentation before we issue a building permit, what about an instance where, let's say, you know, someone's interested, they sign the agreement of sale, they sign the disclosure, the developer, builder, whoever gives it to us for the building permit and everything else they need to do. What happens if that home buyer, that deal falls through?
They're supposed to give us a new statement.
A new statement? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or for example, if you have a home buyer who builds a home on spec, or they build a model home, you know, since they don't have a buyer when that home is built, they don't have to provide us with a statement at that time. However, if you read that same, you know, section on the bottom of page 4, it also applies when they're applying for an occupancy permit. So, if they build a home on spec or it's a model home, and they haven't provided us with a statement during the zoning or building permit stage, we are going to require it at the occupancy permit stage. Okay. So we are going to get it one way or another. Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay.
So we'll, hearing no other questions for Peter, then we can put this on our agenda for our June meeting.
Yeah, we'll put it on the June 1st meeting agenda to approve for advertising.
Right.
And then it'll be on the July 6th meeting.
Fine. Is that okay with everybody?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
Oh, my pleasure.
Our next item on tonight's agenda is an update on from our manager on the township emergency generator.
Did you just want to see if you had any questions, Chuck?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do we have any questions from the public on the ordinance that we've been discussing for the residential resident disclosure ordinance?
Hey, Chuck.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, Bob Burns, Ziegler-Ville Road. Question, maybe Peter can answer. Will there be a fee for the township to recoup the time that's spent, you know, documenting this paperwork? So if it actually falls on before they get the building permit, will there be another fee that the developer will have to pay to cover our expenses so that we're not doing this work for nothing?
That's something that the board would have to decide after the adoption of the ordinance or conjunction with the adoption of the ordinance by amending the fee schedule. I can tell you, I don't believe in other townships and municipalities where they've adopted something similar to this. I do not believe they've adopted a separate fee for this. It's just part of the building permit package.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. So getting back to where we were, Mark, our manager is going to give us an update on the emergency generator, I guess, replacement.
Yeah, so the township building has an emergency generator that runs just portions of the building. It runs a couple of outlets in each room. We have orange outlets. Originally, when we first lost the generator in the fall, we were looking at doing a whole building generator that would run the whole generator with run the whole building with an automatic transfer switch. Those numbers came in very, very expensive. What we've had has been adequate for the township in the past, just having the generator run those certain outlets. With the chief and I went back and we looked at it and we decided, you know, it's been working for us since the building was built. We don't really need to go to a whole building generator. What that does do is we have to go start this generator and then flip a couple switches in the electrical room. But again, this has been working. Knock on wood, we don't lose electric very often. But when we do, you know, it's nice to be able to get back up and running within a couple of minutes, and it wouldn't take long to do that. So we had an electrician come in who spec'd out a generator that is equal to the current generator that we have. It has been very tough to get quotes again. That's why we're in May. I was finally able to get three quotes. The last quote I got in the very beginning of May for three. The cheapest quote is $31,025 for the generator, and we would buy that under CoStars. The generator was spec'd out by the electrician. So the electrician is around $8,600 to do the work to upgrade the service. The panel at the new connects, there's a new connection that the new generators have a different connection. Our generator that we currently have is a military surplus. So it goes back, I'm not sure what war, but it's you could definitely put antique tags on it. to roll it down the road. So looking at $31,025 for the generator, $8,600 for the electrician, and then some parts that we would buy just under our regular account with Denny Electric that we need. So again, we got three quotes for the generator. It was $31,025, $31,700, and the other one was $50,121. So if everyone's okay with just replacing what we currently have, we will look to do that, look to get approval at the June 1st meeting to proceed with that. And would like to get that locked in as prices is changing very quickly with the fluctuation in copper and steel and such.
These are all mobile trailer mounted.
Correct. Generally. Yes. Yeah.
And the difference between the two $31,000, like in summary, what's the difference between the two that are almost the same price?
The modern one is a Generac, so it's a well-known brand. It's a John Deere engine. Mm-hmm. The other one I couldn't find a whole lot. It's Airman Generators. I'm not very familiar with them. It is a company out of Quakertown here that's all they do is generators. There's not much difference. It has the same options. The one thing that the Generac did have was a block heater. So I thought that would be important so that in the cold weather it would help. And that's actually on the cheaper one. That was about the only difference I could find.
And warranty and expected maintenance the same?
Yeah, we do. We would put it on our annual generator contract to have it maintained. They come in twice a year.
Are these? Is there a warranty on these?
I don't have that in front of me. I'd have to go back and look at my emails for that. But I can do that and get that for you for next week.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for gathering these. And I know it's been a tough uphill battle with generator companies, so thanks for sticking with it.
Yep.
Mark, I have a question on the generator. You may not be able to answer it only because the existing generator is, as you said, vintage. But in terms of the KW rating for what we're looking at, about 30 KW 28. And I know the other one was much larger. That was like 60 KW.
That was the whole building generator. Oh, the one that we quoted earlier, that was the whole building generator was 60.
That was the 50 or whatever it was.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yep.
So how does that compare with what we have now in terms of the KW? Do you know?
It's right in line, and we'd actually have to hook it to a 100 amp panel. We'd have to actually bring the electric down a little bit from these generators. Mm-hmm. Currently that one runs on a 100 amp panel, so we'd have to the electrician will change this so that it runs 100 amp comes into the building.
Mm-hmm. And would this need to be then cycled every so often when it's not being used? Is it like start automatically once a week or something, or how does that work?
We would have to do that. Okay. We'd start it like once a month.
Okay.
And that's what we were doing with the other one.
Right. You just have a sheet and then you look at it.
Yeah. Yep. And again, this would be manual. So if we do lose electric, we'd have to manually turn it on and then manually throw two switches in the electric room, you know, to take the building off of the main electric feed and then turn on the generator feed.
Mm-hmm. And this would live out of doors when it's not in use?
Or we have a shed that it would live in.
Okay.
Mark, I just had a question. I recall we were working on the budget last year. I think you said you might put it into the 2021 budget.
We put in 150,000 because that was our worst case scenario.
Okay.
In building, I don't know the line item off the top of my head, in building improvements. So we do have it in there, and during the budget meetings, I did say that's worst case scenario. We hope to definitely do a lot better. So, again, going the whole building generator with an automatic transfer switch would be great, but the township has worked with this same situation for the last, I'm going to say, 30 years. And it just doesn't make any sense for $100,000 more to have an automatic transfer switch.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So we're good in the budget for this. It's not going to be a surprise.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yep.
And Mark, you probably indicated this. I gather is it diesel or gasoline or?
It's diesel. This one's actually a John Deere.
Okay.
3029 HFG03 engine, Dan.
Oh.
Yes. So it's a mobile diesel engine driven generator set.
Okay.
And a tier 4, which means it doesn't pollute a lot.
Oh, there you go.
I do a lot of work with large diesel engines. My other question, Mark, is in terms of the fuel tank, how long can it run on one tank? Do we know?
I did have that. I want to say it's 40 hours.
Okay, great.
I will check that though. I do remember reading that in the brochure.
So are you looking for approval?
No, I'll answer those. I'll get those couple questions and we'll approve it at the June 1st meeting.
Is that okay with everybody, with the board, that we consider it at our June 1st, our June meeting?
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for sticking it out. I know it hasn't been easy.
So we'll get it done though. So we'll bring that back at June 1st and I'll answer those couple questions. And if you have any other questions, we'll try to get those answered.
All right, moving on. The next agenda item is Arcadia Development. This is a request from the developer to remove topsoil from the site.
I guess that would be me.
Yep.
Yep. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So Carol Schuler here, engineer. Metropolitan Development provided a letter that was in your packet requesting permission to remove about 3,000 cubic yards of topsoil from the Arcadia Station project. And your township code states that no topsoil shall be removed from the site or used to spoil without a permit issued by the township. So just to give you a little background on what's happening here and why. Topsoil, for anybody who doesn't know the term, it's the top layer of soil that has the greatest organic matter content and also contains microorganisms. In decades past, some developers treated topsoil like a commodity. They would strip it off at the beginning of a development and sell it. Then there was no topsoil to return to those graded lots, making it very difficult to vegetate or establish lawn. And that's the reason that this ordinance exists, to prevent topsoil from being sold like a commodity and not restored onto the site. The thing that changed, and particularly in this development, there's a stormwater management design which requires the builder to apply amended soils to many of these lots. So with amended soils, you add sand and compost and organic materials. You blend them in with the topsoil at a 2-to-1 ratio, and then you place them on the lots. So bringing in all that material for amended soils is the reason there's excess topsoil on this project. So I had some correspondence back and forth with the developer who represented, he's estimating right now he's got between 9,000 and 11,000 cubic yards stockpiled on the project site. And he expects to be spreading back out about 3,000 cubic yards of that when they convert the basins back to detention basins from sediment basins and finish the lots. And some material is proposed to be spread in open space A to level that out. That's 3,000 to 5,000 cubic yards. And they're looking to sell another 3,000, not sell. I misspoke. I apologize. I don't think you can sell topsoil today the way you could once. They're looking to get rid of another 3,000 cubic yards. And so as far as schedule, it was represented to me that the topsoil removal would occur as soon as they received the permit from the township. And placement of material on open space A would happen concurrent with conversion of the sediment basins to detention basins, which they estimate will be in about 4 weeks. There is an NPDES permit for this project that requires material removed from the project be taken to a site with an approved ENS plan or a current NPDES permit. So we do recommend the township note that requirement on any permit that would be issued for the removal of topsoil. So again, this is generally informational, but wanted to make the board aware of it since this, you know, this development is of much interest in the township. That's all I have, but I'd be happy to answer any questions there might be on this topic.
Carol, I just have one question. I heard you mention the word permit. So in addition to they're asking us for permission, do they also need a permit?
The way our code reads is that they get a permit from the township for removing topsoil. I don't know what kind of permit forms Mark might have in his desk drawer, but I appreciate that we have the open communication about this with the developer so that things aren't happening without the township's knowledge.
It would be a letter. We don't have a permit form for this. We would issue them a letter that the board approved the removal of up to 3,000 cubic yards of topsoil.
Can we ask where it's going?
Well, there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But where is it going?
Their letter represented that Spear Excavating would be taking it and screening it for future sale to homeowners. So there is where I would suggest that we make sure that Spear Excavating has some sort of an ENS plan for wherever they're taking it to meet with the conditions of their NPDES permit.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for either our engineer, our solicitor, or our township manager on this?
To the engineer, this is Dan. To the engineer and the manager, have you any experience where this type of scenario has occurred before, where we've had excess topsoil and then development has encountered that? And are there other circumstances where, if it's a value, would something go to the township? I mean, I'm just speculating here.
Sure. I've been through this with another development in my former position where we had Toll Brothers who had a mountain of excess topsoil. And in that option, we did have a place that we could take it, some of it. And some of it, we didn't even put a dent in the pile. But they did then take it off site to another approved site. And it was the same situation where the amended soils, the times haven't caught up with the ordinances haven't caught up with the new times. So,
okay.
But this gives you an option to make sure that the topsoil isn't sold off, you know, before it's put back in the homes that need it. So it's I think it's still good to have it. This is going to happen probably with every development.
Okay.
moving forward.
All right. Thanks.
Are there any other questions for our staff?
Yeah, I have a quick question. This is Noel for Carol. Did you say that they were planning on taking that soil before or after they were finished with our development?
So they would be planning, the way it was represented to me is they would be allowing that 3,000 cubic yards to be removed as soon as they knew the township was okay with that. And then the leveling of open space A would happen concurrent with the restoration of the basins, which is about 4 weeks out.
Okay, so they planned on taking it before they finished up. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any reason for that arrangement, Carol?
Well, I suspect that's one of convenience, but the reality is that it does seem like there's enough material there that they'll have plenty of material for their restorations and placement of material on open space A. Whether it's exactly what we had envisioned or a little less, I don't think is problematic to the well-being of the project and how we end up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, some of the topsoil is on building lots. So D.H. Horton wants to get the lots cleared off so that they can start building. So my assumption is they'll move that off of the, and again, this is an assumption, they'll move it off of the two building lots, the existing building lots, where they need to finish the two homes. And then the last place they would start to move dirt off of would be the open space area in the center of the circle, where the playground will go.
I guess my only concern is with them moving off everything they think they need to move off, and then realizing once they start, you know, putting this topsoil back on any lots that need it, the open space, and that they don't have enough.
That's kind of where I was going.
And I can appreciate that concern, and I had that too. But since the next place they would be putting what's left is open space A, and we were talking about quite a bit of material going over there. If there's a little less material going over there, I don't know that that's a bad thing for the town.
Are they putting more than 6 inches on open space A?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Gia's with us. Yeah, Gia has her hand up.
Yeah.
Hey, Gia.
Hi, good evening. For those who don't know, I'm a general counsel for Metropolitan, just listening in. As the township manager explained, yeah, we will be moving it off the lots first. There is a real urgency with the builder just to start those homes. And there, as Carol explained, and if you looked at the numbers, there is plenty for open space A. I'm not concerned when we've looked at it that there's not going to be the required amounts. And obviously, Carol will be out there to inspect it as we go along.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gia.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and just a follow-up question. So basically, with the exception of maybe two or three lots, all the lots have been built out and already have their topsoil on them?
Yes, yeah. Or under construction right now. Yeah, this is the time in the project where we know with some good certainty, you know, what we have left over, and it's just been building up there because of the amended soils and whatnot.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mark, we also have a hand up. Ms. Megan.
Okay, yep. Megan, you can unmute.
Yeah, hi. Actually, this is not Megan. This is Megan's husband.
Can you state your full name and address?
Sure. So this is Mark Brennan. I actually reside in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but I'm I'm a prospective homeowner in the Arcadia Station development. So I'm under contract with the builder for lot 19, which is one of the two lots that the topsoil is currently covering. So I just wanted to reach out just because I had signed a purchase agreement with the builder back in October 2020. Obviously, my family and I were very excited about, you know, the prospect of purchasing a home in your township, but it's been about, you know, 7 months now with no progress. So the reason I'm reaching out is as someone who is directly impacted by this ongoing initiative to relocate the topsoil, I just had a few, you know, follow-up questions regarding the logistics and the timing of this process. Can you just clarify what the next steps are and also the approximate timelines associated with getting the topsoil relocated? Was it 4 weeks? And then also I heard that you were mentioning Open Space A. Is that a space within Arcadia Station development itself?
Can I just interrupt? Is it, Peter, is it appropriate for us to be answering that question, or should that be a question that is the developer responds to?
Yeah, it you know, certainly we don't control the timing of when the developer, you know, does the work to construct this lot. I don't know if Carol can address it or if Gia wants to address it.
I can. Yeah, Peter, I'll start, and Carol can obviously chime in on the, you know, the township part or inspection part of it. obviously, we don't represent D.R. Horton, but I can tell you that I've already gotten two emails tonight asking whether or not we're going to be okay to move the topsoil. So we understand that it's very important to D.R. Horton. The 4 weeks referenced was for Open Space A, about when that process was going to be starting over there. I believe the process to move the topsoil off the lots will begin as soon as we receive the letter, quote, or permit from the township that gives us that permission, and we supply any of the required information, you know, conditioned in that letter. So timing wise, we would hope it would be much sooner than the four weeks. But again, we just have to receive the letter, you know, allowing us to do it, confirm that if there is an NPDES requirement for the other site, that that's been met, and that we can satisfy Carol with and Mark with any information.
I'll add to that. I agree with what was said. The timing really is in the hands of the builder. It's not me. So once the township issues that letter, it's really about the builder's schedule. I suspect there's more than 3,000 cubic yards in that one location. So that would be a start to moving that pile, but I'll leave it to the developer to speak to movement of the entire pile and when that would happen. I don't really have good control of that schedule.
Yep. And what I can say is that if we know the letter is forthcoming tomorrow, we can provide D.R. Horton with a schedule to the best of our ability. I don't control the construction schedules, but I know that they can certainly provide D.R. Horton with the time frame, knowing that the letter is forthcoming from the township. And then D.R. Horton, I'm sure, can relay that to the potential to the purchaser.
Sir, I hope that addresses your question.
Yeah, that helped. Thanks very much.
Yeah. So I guess the question for the board, is this something that we feel comfortable taking action on this evening? Is that what's in front of us?
I did get a question from Bob. Is this something that the township could take the soil from them? Is it in the ordinance that the township kind of has first right of refusal or anything like that?
Unfortunately, our ordinance is not written that way.
I suspect that if the township wanted to take it, the builder would have been happy to send it our way, but I don't know that you have a place to put it right now.
And I guess we could I mean, Colonial Park is an open area, but we don't really have a plan for there. And we need ENS plans put together and that kind of stuff. So it would take us a while to get prepared for that.
That's exactly correct, sir. Yes, the receiving location would have to have an ENS plan designed and approved by the County Conservation District to accept that material. So it wouldn't be a quick thing to do. And again, the township almost has too much material right now and some to lose. I don't know that you have a particular use for that at this time.
So I guess my question still stands, right? Is that what you're looking for, Mark, to see whether...
You can take action on it tonight if you would like, or we can wait until June 1st if there's any additional questions that need to be answered, or if there's any stipulations that you want to put on the permit.
Is Peter going to write this up, or are you going to write this up?
I would do it jointly with Peter. I mean, we put a requirement in that, you know, they take too much, they got to bring it back. So.
So does that sound, are we willing to have Mark in collaboration with Peter write up something that we can consider for next week?
That seems reasonable. I mean, that way we'll have something to actually look at.
Yeah.
I agree. I think we should see it before we take action.
Okay. That's fine by me as well.
Hey, Chuck.
Yes, Bob Burns.
Yes, sir. How you doing? One other question.
Bob, give your address just for the record, please.
Yes, sir. Zieglerville Road.
Yeah.
The question would be that Carol mentioned that they would be having a company come in that would be shredding the material and delivering it to homeowners. So are they going to bring their own unit in and shred it, you know, day after day after day to supply their customers? And when they reach that 3,000 cubic yard figure, that's it? Or are they planning on taking 3,000 cubic yards, loading it dump truck after dump truck to this person, and then it's done in one fell swoop? Or are the residents down there going to have to put up with the noise of the machine, the dust of the machine, and everything else? Just something for you guys to think about.
Well, we're go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
I was going to let Peter or you address that.
No, that's fine. I will. We're taking it offsite to Spear Excavating, and they're going to screen it and sell it to homeowners there. We're not doing any other than the amended soils and all the construction activities that we're permitted to do on site. We're not going to be starting a new process at Arcadia Station.
You want to get it out of there as soon as possible?
Yes.
Understood. All right. So I think there's general consensus then, Mark, for you to work with Peter on something that we can review and hopefully approve next week.
Sounds good. We'll have that ready for you.
But thank you, Gia, for coming.
All right.
And thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol, Mark.
All right. That if we are moved on to the next agenda item is just comprehensive plan update. We did have a meeting on the 13th. And I believe that we, in that meeting, the Comprehensive Plan Steering Committee tied up hopefully many loose ends, if not all loose ends that we could think of. We will be having a meeting in June. It says open house, but really it's a steering committee meeting on June the 10th. Again, that's Thursday evening at 7 p.m. If things look in in order. At that meeting, we have discussed having the steering committee vote on recommending moving the plan forward to the Board of Supervisors for their consideration of adoption, or, you know, I guess that really would be their consideration of adoption and, you know, setting the time. Obviously, they'd have to establish some sort of timetable based on advertising requirements and getting the plan out to the people who need to review it, other municipalities and things like that. So that's kind of where we are at in the process. Are there any questions?
I guess it's a question and a comment. At the public session that was held last month or was it this month?
It was earlier this month.
It seems like it was forever ago. There was not very much of the public there, and there was not a lot of explanation or discussion of the meat of the comprehensive plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking we need more of a rollout to the public of this than occurred at that meeting.
Well, you will be having a public hearing. And
well, I guess what I was expecting at that session was having more of a presentation of more of the details, you know, what it's going to do and what the different chapters are saying, and something more akin to what happened at the first public session where there was different topics presented.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm very familiar with the plan because I've been into all the meetings, but for someone who is just coming in cold, there was not a lot of meat offered up. My concern is that I'm not sure this really fulfilled the intent of a public session.
Well, we had a public open house last year, which was successful. We did a survey to the public last year, which was reasonably successful. And we, you know, have put the plans out as we've had the opportunity. We advertised that May 6th meeting on many different platforms, as well as having signs out. So I'm not exactly sure what else really we could have done given the current circumstances to attract more people to come to this. We've done everything in the public. So we were more than happy to answer people's questions after the video to go over what it was, what was going on with the plan. So I think at this point, you know, if I'm taking the pulse of the steering committee, I think they feel similarly that we've kind of done everything that we can reasonably do in the circumstances that we're in to move this plan forward.
You have a hand up.
Warren, you have your hand up. Could you unmute yourself?
Sure. Chuck, could you tell us what the procedure is to move forward now? You said to move it to the Board of Supervisors. It doesn't have to go to the Planning Commission first. It just goes straight to the Board of Supervisors. They vote on it and make it law. Or what other hurdles must it go through before it gets approved, and how long would that take?
So for the record, you're Warren Jacobs in Fulmer Road, right?
That's right.
So basically, there's an advertising requirement, you know, public notice. I believe it's 45 days. We also have to send out copies to other municipalities, to the regional planning. We should be doing that as well. I don't believe we need to send out a copy specifically to our planning commission, although I could review. I'm sure Peter will review that. I mean, generally, when it comes to this part, a lot of times the law firm or the solicitor's office takes responsibility, at least making sure that the copies are sent to everybody that the MPC says should be getting the copy. Yeah. So it starts a window. you have to have the advertising, and then you have to have a public hearing. Now, the public hearing, the Board of Supervisors could decide not to do anything, and they're just taking public comment that night. Or they could, at the public hearing, decide they want to take action that night. It's up to the board what they feel like doing at that point. So the recommendation that would be coming in June, perhaps, by the steering committee was saying, look, we think we've got the plan finished to the point where, you know, the board should consider the adoption process. Now, whether that adoption process takes, you know, 45 days or 90 days or longer, that's up to the board to decide how they want to proceed from that point forward. There's a minimum amount that they can do. I think the number is 45, but I think I see Peter reading as I'm talking. You know, the board could certainly make it last longer if that's what they want to do. Does that answer your question, Warren?
Well, sort of, but one of the things that I'm kind of trying to figure out here is basically the steering commission or committee is the sole group that does that's responsible for this. It does not go to our planning commission at all.
I don't believe it has to, but I guess Peter is.
No, if you read the MPC, the MPC in some ways actually kind of is written under the belief that it might actually be prepared by the planning commission. And I've worked in other townships where the planning commission, it wasn't a separate committee, but the planning commission was the driving force behind the preparation of a comprehensive plan or an amendment thereto. So, the MPC only requires a comprehensive plan to be sent to the county planning commission, the local school district, and neighboring municipalities. That doesn't mean we can't send it to our planning commission. We certainly can if we wish, but we're not required to.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Warren?
I believe so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, very often the group that does the comp plan is like, sometimes you think of it as a splinter group from the planning commission. That's the way we did our open space plan years ago. It was a subset of planning commission plus a few extra people who were involved in that. Are there any other questions on this topic? Again, we're having a meeting in June. If there are additional concerns, bring them to the steering committee meeting and we can discuss them in more detail there. So that you're not just hearing my voice, you'll hear other opinions as well. Thank you. So that brings us to new business. Is there any new business this evening?
Yeah, I do have. I got a email from Lou over in the Village Development. I wanted to ask about the feasibility of having a crosswalk put in from Village Drive directly across from the township building to the township building property for people to cross Spring Mount Road. When you put a crosswalk in, you have to make sure it's safe. So it's not as easy as just painting white lines on the street. The other problem is it's a mid-block crossing and it would be going into a curb. So what you really would need to do is do a curb cut and do a handicap ramp to do it correctly. And then, you know, plan it out a little bit. And also the curb cut and the handicap ramp on the other side on Village Drive is not to today's standards. So it would have to be upgraded also. Did speak with Carol about this a little bit. And we have the idea, if the board thinks it's a good idea, we could begin working on it a little bit, but we would take it to the CBDG county grant program. Next year, that's a grant that the township doesn't usually apply for. It's for low income areas, but it does have a piece for accessibility that we would be able to put a grant proposal in for. I just wanted to bring it to the board to let you know that the idea is out there to see if you guys have any interest in it. It would allow people to get from the village, the townhomes across the street to the township building and down to the creek through the township building property. Again, it's more than just putting white lines on the street. Unfortunately, there needs to be some more work done. So it's don't have cost ready at this point. Didn't want to go far.
Sorry, Mark.
Go ahead.
Just had a question for you and Carol. Is it because it's in the middle of a, it's not at an intersection, would it require the flat light signaling up from the crosswalk? Like you see a lot of times when you have a unexpected crosswalk in the middle of a major road.
That's part of what we would need to look at, the site distance. And whether or not additional signage would be required. There's some formulas to follow for that.
Okay.
Because it would incorporate accessibility, that sort of opens the window towards the CDBG grant, which I think is an opportunity for the township.
Okay.
You may be able to answer this, Carol, but I wonder if our police chief will have some input. All I know is when you come out of the township building, those cars come up that hill from the right. They can come up really fast. And I just have some safety concerns about, you know, you can have a legal crosswalk and you can have all the white lines you want, but people zip up over that hill. I mean, is it going to be safe?
That's exactly the question, Marla. I agree with you, and I had the same concern. That's why we need to look at sight distance before it goes too far.
I mean, maybe if they need a crossing, it needs to be somewhere else. I would be very concerned about having people cross right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, those are the safety issues that absolutely need to be looked at. I agree.
And we don't have a sidewalk on the township building side.
We do have a sidewalk, but we have a curb, then we have a grass strip, and then we have the sidewalk.
Okay, so, I was trying to remember where the sidewalk was. Okay,
yeah,
thanks.
Yeah,
that's there.
So the goal is to get them to basically our road that goes down to the police and ambulance station?
Yes, that's what he's asking for.
Yeah, okay. I mean, conceptually, would it have to connect to our sidewalk or connect basically just to an opening in a road, or is that not safe?
You'd want it to come straight across from their end of their sidewalk. I don't know you'd be allowed to put a crosswalk into like our driveway from the grass area.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
I am. Like the police have a white line for speed test at an hour probably outdated handicap sidewalk.
Yes.
Again, I'm not trying to make another project here, but instead of updating the old handicap ramp at the on village to bring the sidewalk down to across the opening of our township driveway, and then you're not even getting on our sidewalk technically. I mean, our sidewalk's a sidewalk to nowhere, right? There's no reason to get on it, but it would drop you right off into the road right near the post office box. But again, I know this is just feasibility at this point.
Yeah, I think for I'm Terry. I can now defer to the experts, but I think for pedestrians, you need to dump on a sidewalk, and then we're going to have to do stuff so that they can see when they get to the end by the driveway that goes into the township building, so they know it's safe to get off the sidewalk. I think we have to do things like that. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken. That sounds ridiculous. I mean, no, it sounds ridiculous, but I think it's probably what we'd have to do.
Yeah, you'd have to update all the handicap ramps to today's standards or today's requirements, I guess I should say, rather than standards.
I just think we need to be really sure this is a good idea, because if we have one near miss of a resident, I mean, I've had a couple near misses in my car, and I've got airbags and all kinds of things, but People drive fast over that hill, and I just don't know. The other question I had was, what's the traffic there anticipating? I mean, how many people, what's the demand for people to be crossing that street? Are we talking 5 people, 100 people a day? What?
We do have a couple people come across on probably a daily basis. Quite often, you know, if we look outside, there's kids riding their bikes. More in the summer, people walk the kids down. We have a couple of people that walk their baby strollers, and then they walk down to the creek. Nowhere's near 100 a day.
I just wonder if we could ask the chief to weigh in on this, if he might have some ideas.
Okay.
I mean, they're very familiar with that road and what happens on that road. I'd like to hear what they have to say about if there's a safer place to do it or if there's a better way to do it than what they're proposing.
Yeah. And then I guess the last thing would be if they actually are using it to access the creek, which I can understand because I think there's land that the township owns kind of like way behind the building, right? That goes down to the creek.
Yep.
We probably need to give them a real path to walk to get down there rather as opposed to walking along the parking spots on the right-hand side of the parking lot, especially since you have the police and the ambulance flying out of there. So I think it morphs into a pretty good size project, but if it, you know, if we can get a grant, I don't know, but yeah, there's a whole bunch of things to consider here. The safety is definitely something, but I'll defer to the engineer and the manager to give us more intel.
Yeah, I will take a,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, there, right now there's just sort of a depression that's not up to the current ADA standards, what's there now. And there's a telephone in the way. Otherwise, maybe you could wrap the sidewalk around the curb and come out a little bit further down and a better sight distance. But there's a telephone pole there. So I'm sure you guys will all work it out somehow or decide what's the right thing to do.
All right. Don't have any more comments on that.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Bob Burns, Ziegleville Road. I was talking to Lou about this, and the main reason Lou brought this up is actually because of the safety of the kids. He's witnessed the kids crossing on a daily basis, going across and walking down, you know, the driveway ramp down towards the ambulance, and then diverting back, you know, onto the township property to get to the creek. And I think that's what his main concern was, that these kids are doing this. I don't know if they're doing it 7 days a week, but he said they're doing it quite often. And he's, you know, very worried about the safety of the kids crossing right now. So that was one of his main concerns.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions, or are there, hearing none, if there aren't, Mark, is there any other new business before we go to public comment?
Yes, the Open Space Board, we've been announcing that we were looking for applications. We have 12 applications now, so we're going to stop accepting applications for that board. When we first put that out, we were only going to keep it open for 30 days, and I think we've had it open for about 90 days. Just another very quick one. The park board is looking to install a sign at Village Center Park about the gardens. This was in the budget that we had presented, had been presented when we did the budget. Originally, the plan was that the sign would cost $600. The sign is coming in at $900. I just wanted to make sure the board was okay with me approving them to get that sign that we had talked about in the original budget process. Obviously, with it being $300 more, we'll, you know, substitute out one of the other little projects.
So Mark, they have the money in the budget.
Yes.
Yep. Pay for that. So if they want to spend less money somewhere else, then I don't have an issue with it.
Same here.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Yep.
Oops, sorry, did someone else have something?
No, I just, no issue.
Okay. And then at the Planning Commission meeting, and it's not on the agenda, but the fee in lieu of ordinance was talked about. I did forward those comments to Peter. Did you want to take a moment now to talk about that, or do you want to put that on the June 1st agenda?
I'd prefer it be on the June 1st agenda to talk about for the first time.
Okay.
Because I don't think we're going to have time to review what Peter's reviewed. Because I think he needed to make comments or changes, didn't he, Mark?
Well, there's comments from the Planning Commission, and the board would have to instruct Peter to make those changes.
Yeah, this is just to address, I think, a miscomprehension from the Planning Commission.
So we can do that at the June 1st if we don't want to. We'll put it on the agenda for June 1st if that's the will of the board.
Yeah, Peter, are you talking about the lengthy discussion at the Planning Commission about using the money for not using the money for open space or not doing away with open space? Because I remember something like that seemed a bit off of topic. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, when I write an ordinance, I put everything in there in the kitchen sink because I find it easier for my clients to say, we don't like that, take it out, than for them to think, hey, Peter, this is missing, put it in. And so in this ordinance, I put in fee in lieu of not only for park improvements, but also for park land and open space land. And I think the Planning Commission was a bit perturbed by that and was wondering whether or not that was something that was asked for or directed. I just put it in there because that's what most townships do. And there certainly are instances when it's useful, but it's just something for the board to think about and consider whether or not they want it to stay in there or if it should be taken out. And I don't need an answer now, but I just wanted to let you know that was something that's been in that ordinance since the get-go. And it's just something you'll need to address when we decide to finalize the ordinance for advertising.
Well, can you just take a minute and clarify for me? Because I remember the concern was that some board in the future might decide, well, we don't want any open space, just give us the money and we'll eliminate all the open space. But we still have to comply with our ordinance requirement for open space. So can you just clarify, and I think there's some Planning Commission members here, what that
I mean, that certainly could, you know, that certainly could be the case. But if there is a board in the future that really doesn't like open space, you know, they can always adopt their own ordinance change that would eliminate the requirements for open space or mandate, or add a fee in lieu of for open space. Like I said, most townships do have that. And I've seen it used when you have developments where, you know, the open space is, you know, arguably unusable. It's like just a worthless piece of land. It meets the ordinance requirements, but everyone looks at it and says, you know, why are we saving this? This is stupid. It doesn't serve any purpose. It'd be better for us to get the money and use that money towards, buying additional land to add to existing parks or to buy better equipment and improvements for existing parks. Rather than, you know, lose it here in something that's just going to be a little orphaned piece of land that no one's ever going to, you know, be bothered with. So, you know, depending on what the board wants to do, you know, you can keep it in there, you can take it out. It's just put in there for you guys to consider. But there's no right or wrong answer. It's just what this board desires to do in regards to a fee in lieu of.
And I don't want to belabor this, but just for myself, so what you're saying is if we require X percentage of open space of the total property, this would not bypass that. This is referring to other open space requirements.
No,
it would allow the board to tell a developer, if the developer, you know, wants to do this, for the developer to provide the fee in lieu of this required open space, rather than create, you know, rather than create an open space, which is, you know, not very desirable.
So then it would override our existing ordinance requiring open space, which is.
Instead of requiring actual land, you would be getting money. You would be getting that fee in lieu of.
So it could override our existing ordinance for open space requirements.
Yes, if the board decided to use it that way, yes.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you.
Right. I mean, it's been clear all along. That's what the way it was written. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would have to say that I concurred with the arguments that were put forth by the Planning Commission. So I am taking that part of the overall thing, modifying that out, the open space in lieu of, you know, all the rec fields and all that. They were okay with all that. And I think that makes better sense. Because like you've told us many times, Peter, we can't control the actions of a future board.
Correct.
so, but we can at least make them have a public meeting if they want to change an ordinance such as this and sell away their open space.
Yeah. And okay. Yeah, it's up to, you know, it's up to the five of you what you want to do.
Okay.
So we'll bring this back at the June 1st meeting, the have a discussion and then provide Peter with the direction on if we want to, like he said, he has everything in there in the kitchen sink. So if we want him to take the kitchen sink out, then we'll proceed forward without the kitchen sink.
Sounds good.
I'll have that on the June 1st agenda.
Understanding the way it was written, at least I did, that's why I felt strongly it needed to go to the Planning Commission as opposed to just putting it out for advertising.
That's all I have in new business, Chuck.
Public comment. Do we have any comments from our public tonight?
I do not see anything.
So adjournment. Need a motion for adjournment?
I move to adjourn the meeting. Dan Orff.
Second. Terry, come on.
You got it. Second.
Terry Bird, seconds. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Peter. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. Thank you.
Yep.